Welcome to the Jam Frequency Radio Show. This is John DeMaria, your friendly host. Every week here on the Jam Frequency Radio Show, we get to discover up-and-coming artists as well as living legends. We get to know their stories, how they create music, and what makes them unique as artists. The Jam Frequency Radio Show, where words and music kaleidoscope. This week on the Jam Frequency Radio Show, we continue our June Lake Jam Fest 2022 artist series. This week, our featured band is the Great Achilles Wheel, a California band that blurs the lines between genres with a mix of infectious high-energy dance beats and stark lyrical ballads. Achilles Wheel is a high-energy roots world and rock and roll band from Northern California. On the line with us, we've got Shelby Snow, the bass player of Achilles Wheel, and the great Paul Cam, guitarist, vocalist, and songwriter of Achilles Wheel. How you guys doing today?
Doing all right. Doing great, John. Good to hear your voice.
Cannot wait to see you guys play here up at the June Lake Jam Fest this September. Everything is looking like we're going to have it this year, so that's a good thing.
Yay.
I know, right? Gosh, the last couple years have been so strange.
It's going to be music to my ears.
It's a beautiful thing, that's for sure. Now, we've interviewed with Paul Cam a few times, and we've got some great lengthy discussion about Paul's background as a musician and some of his influences, etc. But we have Shelby on the line, so I'm going to take full advantage and ask you, Shelby, how did you get started in music? What influenced you?
There was a specific event. I was 12, went to a concert with a good buddy of mine, my best friend at the time, and we went to a music event up at UCSC, UC Santa Cruz, and that was all she wrote. We got together the next day and decided that we were going to become musicians. David, the guy I went to that show with, David Klaus, is now our second drummer. We've added a second drummer to the band. So many years later, we're still making music together, and it's been a good ride.
Wow, 12 years old. What was the first instrument that you played?
Violin. I started out on violin. The band that we went to see had a concert violinist, and they were playing what is now called jam grass. But this was, you know, back in the early 70s, and there was no name for it. It was psychedelic bluegrass, bass rock and roll bluegrass, wild, crazy music. And their violinist was a fellow by the name of Bob Stern, the son related to the famed Isaac Stern. He was classically trained, but he played like a madman in this band down in Santa Cruz. And my buddy Dave and I decided that we would look up this band and both start taking lessons from he, the drummer, and me, the violinist. And I did that for a little while. My mom rented me a violin, and I started taking lessons and decided pretty quickly that, yeah, this is a bit too stuffy for me. And he wanted me to learn all this classical technique and how to hold the bow and how to, you know, and I didn't get to rock out for a long time. And so I decided, hey, well, you also play bass. Why don't you teach me how to play bass? And so I turned in my violin, and my mom got me a $70 pawn shop bass. And I started taking bass lessons from him instead of violin. And then the rest is history.
Beautiful. And that was 12. And then how long was it that you played violin? 6 months? Or was it like a year?
I think it was like 4 months. I took a few months worth of lessons and then played a little bit and took some more lessons and decided it just wasn't going to be for me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're a rebel and you're a rock star. So
I wanted to just rock out. You know, I was 12. I didn't have the discipline to learn all that. You know, that technical stuff. And I just wanted to make some rock and roll and get groupies, of course, you know.
Well, it's awesome. Well, you know, honestly, you haven't lost a step. You still rock out. You really do.
I think I've been working at it and I'm actually starting to make some progress.
I have a question about the early lessons that you take. Were there any lessons that you learned that you still use today from those early days?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Bob showed me some fundamentals that don't go out of style. I haven't taken very many lessons since then, and I don't think I took many. I probably only took a month or two of lessons once a week from Bob on bass. Maybe my parents couldn't afford it or whatever, but I still had my bass, and so started rocking out with my friends and teaching myself. The lessons definitely stick with me. Some of the fundamentals. He gave me some records to learn the bass parts on. He gave me 4 records, and he said, learn these, and you'll know everything there is to know about bass. And I still have those four vinyl records. I probably don't work anymore. They're probably all scratched up and nasty, but I still have them. And I did work with them quite a bit. Good, valuable lessons from some real solid players.
Now, do you remember those four records or one or two?
Sure, yeah. We've got Moby Grape, Grape Jam, Bob Dylan, Nashville Skyline, Carole King, Tapestry, and the Notorious Byrd Brothers, the Byrds.
Oh, wow. Very nice.
And he figured that that was the fundamentals, at least to get started as a bassist, as a rock and roll bassist.
When did you know that you were going to be a musician? When was it, I'm doing this for reals?
It was that night that I went to that first concert, and it got cemented. I mean, we started to go hear quite a bit of music, and we heard this band. Okay, I'll spell it. It's O-G-A-N-O-O-K-I-E, Ogunookie. We saw them a lot because they were a local Santa Cruz band. And so we'd go see them a lot, but we also started going up to San Francisco and seeing bands at the Fillmore and Avalon and Winterland. And
you mentioned that you had learned to the Carole King's Tapestry album. Now, in your life, you've actually played with Carole King.
I ended up getting a chance to play with Carole King. It was at her ranch in a private event. Basically, she used my band. We were in Boise, Idaho at the time. She has a ranch somewhere outside of Boise. Couldn't take you there to save my life. I don't think we got hired. It was like, hey, you guys want to back up Carole King? And we're like, who would say no? And so we did. And it turns out, you know, we actually had some Carole King in our repertoire with that band at the time. And so we were familiar, and I had learned a lot of her music just coming up, learning how to play bass. And I don't want to hear the recording of it, but it went okay, and everyone seemed to have a good time. So
absolutely. Well, it should be noted that you've also played with Steve Kimmock, Carlos Santana, and Billy Kreutzmann. So you certainly
absolutely
have earned the right to be on the stage with some phenomenal players, certainly legends.
I feel really honored. All those names and then some. Don't know how it all happened. I was in the right place at the right time and got to play with these legendary players. Just forever grateful for that.
Absolutely. I can't overstate how much fun you are to watch on stage. It really is.
Well, thanks,
is contagious and is
That's
always
the whole point.
Always,
this is the point of doing it.
Always feels so joyful and in the moment, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, how did you meet the guys in Achilles Wheel?
I started working with a sound man up here in Nevada County where I live, just as soon as I moved up here, really. And there was a festival just down the hill from my house at an amphitheater, and this band called the Deadbeats was playing. As you could guess, they were a Grateful Dead cover band, and I liked the Grateful Dead. So I was thrilled to go and help out with sound at this show, and I watched them, and boy, they were pretty darn good, and they had an amazing bass player, and I think I may have met some of them that night, even, but it took some years and took some personnel changes through the Deadbeats and basic dissolution of the Deadbeats at a certain point, or they were just playing not very often, you know, just a few times a year. And Paul from the Deadbeats joined up with Johnny Mojo and his drummer Gary Campus to form what is now Achilles Wheel. And after, I guess, about a year, they were playing together and added Mark McCartney. And then something went down with the bass player, and they called me up. And I've been sort of bugging Paul to get together and play some music off and on for, I don't know, 10 years or something. So we finally did. And I was thrilled with that. And then shortly thereafter, I was the replacement bassist. Now here we are. Here we are 11 years later.
11 years. Wow.
It feels like forever and just yesterday.
So, Paul, you were involved with the Deadbeats. Were you responsible for naming that band?
No, I was not. One of our drummers, Gary Campus, and Tom Menig, who was the lead guitar player in the Deadbeats, they had, I believe, conspired to start this band and had a name in place when they called me up and said, you know, would you be interested in playing in a Grateful Dead cover band? I had always come from original bands, mostly, and the idea of playing in a Grateful Dead cover band was, like, sort of last on my list of things I needed to do in my life. But it quickly became something that I learned a lot from. musically and just as a songwriter. Once you get past all the musical elements that are going on in the Grateful Dead music, the songwriter, that's what I really got turned on to. And so, yeah, that's why I got involved in it, because it really, it didn't strike me as being the best idea when I was first asked.
Right. Right, nice. Talking about songwriting, and you're such a great songwriter, what were there specific characteristics of the Grateful Dead music that you draw from as a songwriter? Like lyrical perspective, phrasing, using different time changes, anything specific from the Grateful Dead that you kind of hold on as to, that tool I learned from them?
If I were to be honest, I would say that I experimented with a lot of those elements, you know, the different musical time changes, the different time signatures, the song structure, all of that stuff. It's like, well, let's try this and see what we can steal from these guys that might work in my particular line of work. And at the end of the day, I would have to boil it down to one thing, and that is the lyrical nature of Robert Hunter that completely got in through the cracks in my floorboards and just made a mess all over my songwriting and did good things there. So that's, to me, the most important element of the Grateful Dead that I was, you know, that I came away with.
Right. Talking about the Grateful Dead and Robert Hunter specifically as a lyricist, where do you think he gets his magic from? And have you tried to tap into some of that magic?
Well, you know, I think that where that man got his magic from is probably as mystical as some of the stuff he wrote about. And I don't know that I would really even aspire to trying to analyze that, because it would end up being, it would come up short in some way, I'm sure. But one thing I would say is that I always really respected the very literate and historical nature of some of his references. And I think he did that in a way that brought everything into a present tense, but also incorporated that timelessness that I think, if you were to get right down to it, the linear nature of the human experience through thousands and thousands of years has basically involved a lot of the same experiences over and over and over again. And I think that to be aware of that is probably, in my estimation, one of the things he was so gifted at telling us about, was these things have been and might always be, you know?
Absolutely. Which leads me to a song on your latest live release, Live on Wesley's Road. I'd like to talk about the song One More Last Chance. Can you tell us a little bit about the backstory on how this was created?
One More Last Chance deals very heavily with the idea that these things, as I said just a moment ago, these things have been and probably always will be. And, you know, as I say in the song, the ending of the world has not yet come again today. I think that that part of our experience, to me, it's informative because it talks clearly about the fact that we will be wrestling with these things, and therefore maybe we can hope to be putting something positive into the universe as we're wrestling with this existence that we find ourselves in. And one more last chance, there's always one of those, right?
Absolutely.
It's never really the last chance. So hey there, everybody. My name is Paul Kamm. I play with Achilles Wheel. Looking forward to the June Lake Jam Fest. And you are now listening to Jam Frequency Radio. And I believe we're going to be listening to a song called One More Last Chance right now.
Yes, we are. You'll just have to take my word for it. I know it's kind of awkward for some people I interview. They're like, I believe we will, but I'm going to leave myself an out just in case they don't.
<It's>, yep. Disclaimer.
I believe.
Things may not go as planned.
Oh, that's awesome.
Day. Always afraid.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Jam Frequency Radio Show. That was One More Chance from Achilles Wheel. Again, playing here at the June Lake Jam Fest, September 11th. It's a Sunday. It's going to be a beautiful Sunday here in the Eastern Sierra. We've got Shelby Snow, the bass player, the great bass player from Achilles Wheel, and Paul Cam, of course, the great songwriter, guitarist, and singer. You guys have played a lot in your lives. You're fortunate that you're able to have, you know, that as a means to, I think, just be alive, really. If you're going to do anything, do something that you really absolutely love, and you both clearly love what you do. But I'd like to ask you, either one of you, describe your favorite and least favorite part about being a musician.
Whew. You mean now or forever? Because, you know, things that maybe bothersome now might not have bothered me as a younger man. I like sleeping in my own bed, so being on, you know, long tours and being out on the road, there's always missing that, missing my dog. And, you know, I think, if anything, the love of playing, the love of performing, the love of communicating with the audience and communing with an audience has just grown stronger and stronger over the years. It makes up for any negative aspect. There's something that happens between a musician and an audience that you can't really find many other places in this world. It's almost indescribable and worth every penny.
And I'll add this. I'm going to quote a guy that we think very highly of as a musician and songwriter. And years ago, he was quoted as saying, "The only time that seems too short is the time we get to play."
Yeah.
And I think that still holds true. And I think that, you know, having just gone through the last 2 years that we all experienced together and alone, I would have to say that is even more true than ever. And we're just looking forward to even that short time that we're going to get to play again.
Yeah, keep appreciating, that's for sure. But what do you do if an audience is reacting negatively or being distracted during a performance? Do you guys have any tools for that?
You got to throw beer on them, I think.
No. I have no idea what that's like. Not any time recently, anyway. Years ago, I played in clubs that you'd show up and there would be literally chicken wire in front of the stage, just like in the Blues Brothers, and, you know, made you nervous and made you play really good because you didn't know if there was going to be beer balls and whatever coming flying at you. And never in my life once did I need the chicken wire cage in front of the stage.
That's awesome. Now, Paul, do you have tools that you use if an audience may be a little distracted or maybe not paying it full attention, or you got, have you just superseded that? But think about it in a day when you felt like you had to entertain. What are those tricks, if any?
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, I was half joking with what I said before, but I will say that, you know, you got to shower the audience with love. But the other thing that I think is really true, that is that people who come to any show, whether it's a rock and roll show or a folk music show or a classical music show, they're hoping and they want you to have a good time, because that gives everyone sort of like the open door to do the same. And I think that that's really the key, is that if you feel like there's any awkwardness going on in the room, you just got to like tell everybody it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Let's have a good time. And generally speaking, I think what Shelby is after here is absolutely true. And that is that if you give yourself to it, then everybody's going to benefit.
Well, yep. Perfect.
And,
yeah.
And not, you know, no band ever pleases everyone, you know, no matter what you do, no matter how much it looks like you're having fun, or no matter how great the players, no band's going to please everyone. You know, you have to know that. And some nights there's lots and lots of people that are just totally into it. And some nights there are lots of people that are more into being on the phone. There's no telling which night is going to be which. And usually you grab some people no matter what. We do anyway. Achilles Wheel grabs people even if they're not paying attention. And, you know, you see heads turn. And I think this band in particular has musical ways of garnering attention, you know, like snapping people's attention away from whatever they are doing. Mm-hmm. And I think Mark McCartney in particular is really, really good at that. And we'll snap right from a big rock and roll jam down into a dynamic valley, you know, where it's just a whisper. And then the people talking in the back, all of a sudden everyone in the place can hear them and they shut up, and all of a sudden everyone's listening because it's so quiet. And then you can rock out again or sing some more. And there are things that a band can do in unison that'll actually bring people around to at least pay attention to what's going on.
Absolutely. I think to summarize what you guys are saying, if you are in the space where you're, I guess, leading through this thing called love or positive energy, then others will gravitate to it. And of course, if you're a great band like Achilles Wheel, you've got a little extra magic. Right?
The magic, boy, throwing the magic down. That's the thing that really grabs people, you know.
Let's talk a little bit about Live on Wesley's Road. There's a lot of great jams on there. And I had asked you, Shelby, a couple of tracks that you were fond of on the album. Can you tell us about Welcome to the Monkey House?
Welcome to the Monkey House is an enigma of a song. It's one of the harder rock and roll songs that we do, but it also has elements of funk, and depending on the night, there's a whole jam section where it gets really spacey and lends itself to multiple soloists if we've got people sitting in. It's a wild song. I love it. I love it, and people seem to really respond to it. They sense what we're talking about, I guess. And, you know, anybody who's thinking clearly realizes that this whole shebang is one big monkey house, and the song sort of sums it up in a pretty good way, I think. For me, as a bassist, it's super, super fun to play. This lends itself to my style, I guess. Something. Yeah, it's a blast to play. Hi, this is Shelby from Achilles Wheel, bassist, vocalist. We're going to listen to a song called Welcome to the Monkey House on the Jam Frequency Radio Show.
A freeway rush, victims of the learning curve. Welcome to the monkey house. Oh,
Whistling my favorite song, I click my heels without a care. Darwin didn't get it wrong, but I think we're only partway there. It's just another picket fence wrapped around our innocence. Working hard with painted brush, trying to make a monkey hush. Just another picket fence wrapped around our innocence. Working hard with painted brush, trying to make a
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Jam Frequency Radio Show. How awesome was that, Achilles Wheel? Welcome to the Monkey House. We have on the line with us Shelby Snow on bass and Paul Cam, the guitarist and vocalist and songwriter with Achilles Wheel. They'll be playing at the June Lake Jam Fest on Sunday, September 11th. They go on at 4 o'clock, but you're going to want to appreciate the whole weekend. It's just going to be magical. You can get your tickets at junelakejamfest2022.eventbrite.com. It's been a real treat talking to you guys. guys, your awesomeness. Okay, talking about the June Lake Jam Fest, what is it that makes you so excited to come on up here?
Oh, man. I mean, everything from the setting to the lineup, the stage. Should I say the setting? We realized the first time we played down there, it's a long way from here. And once we got there, we realized how worth that drive was just to be there in that place. It's really that picturesque. And then to have a festival right there by the lake and the mountains, and the people are always so beautiful and colorful, and what's not to love? And the lineups are always really, really great.
And I think the other thing that we've always really appreciated about the folks that run that festival and the people who populate it and help the work that you're doing, John, and just everything around that festival is so supportive of the arts and the schools in the area. It just feels like a very community-oriented and heart-based festival.
Super supportive community, for sure.
Yeah. Putting the arts into schools is so huge. And you think about where we might be if we didn't have those influences in our lives. It's a different experience, and we just need to do it. You know, we're on this earth for, what, 80, 100 years, you know, music. If we can get it early on, then we don't have those intimidations to try it when we're a little bit later. I'm supposed to be good, that kind of, you know, self-doubt. So, yeah, you got to start when you're young, when you're not in the way.
Absolutely. Instill that joy.
Absolutely. I have some fun questions for you. Mr. Shelby, you've got a weekend away, and you've got no electronic devices that you can use, no TV, nothing. But you get one album and a record player that you can bring. What album is it that you bring for the weekend?
And just one record. I've heard this question before, and I've been unable to answer that question then, and I may be unable now. I would always be tempted to say Abbey Road, of course, but I'm going to say Europe 72. Grateful Dead.
Good choice. I love that. So well recorded. I have a question on that record. Did they do vocal overdubs on that? Do you know?
Some, yes.
It's perfection to me.
Some of it was just that good, and then some of it got redone. I think they picked it apart pretty well and redid quite a bit of it back in the studio. Overall, I've heard some crowd recordings, and you can tell, you know, what's been overdubbed and what's been changed. If you listen to a crowd recording of that show or those Europe shows, you can tell what meant changed something or added some clear vocals or whatever. They were never perfect, those guys. They were never perfect. And it's one of the things I loved about them. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes there was some squawking going on stage, and you'd want to fix that up before you release a live record, I think, usually. So I think they did do some of that.
But you guys didn't have any overdubs on your record. It's straight.
We patched up a couple of things, not much. All things considered, I think it didn't take us but a day or two. I remember punching in a bass note, you know, where it just tanked a note, and yeah, that happens. There were just little bits here and there that would get fixed. Sometimes, you know, like sound, some sort of anomaly in the recording or whatever, would fix those things up. Feedback, you know, you want to try and squelch feedback if you can. And but basically, you know, you're recording live, you've got a bunch of drum mics that pick up everything. So there's not all that much you can hide by editing out the oopsies. Basically, you can just hear that stuff. If you listen real close, you can hear those oopsies, so you might as well just sort of leave them in. Maybe just bring them down in the volume a little bit, just hope nobody notices. Yeah. But I don't think any of the performances were perfect. That would be sterile. The thing that's great about Achilles Wheel is how inspired and on the edge all the time. You're just pushing it and pushing it and pushing it every time we play, and it's going to be a little bit different. Every song, every time we perform, say, Monkey House, that's going to be a little bit different the next time. It has to do with the mood of the audience and the sound on stage and the ambient temperature and humidity and who knows what else is involved.
I think that what you're describing, Shelby, sounds a lot like if you're driving that quickly, you might get a wheel on the shoulder every now and again.
You've got to be ready to yank it back on the road. No doubt. Yeah, it's Europe 72, boy, that came out when I was just a little kid, going to my very first Grateful Dead concerts up in San Francisco, and huge influence, and it's a triple album, and there's lots of great jamming on it. So, yeah, if I had one album, I'll take that one.
Beautiful. Paul, what's your one album?
Oh, man, I was afraid you were going to come around and ask me that same question. Well, you know, I'm gonna go a whole different route with that, because this is a record that was hidden from view for years. I have a real affinity for Celtic music and the traditions of that from Ireland and Scotland, and a lot of the music that was brought from those countries to this country. There's a songwriter by the name of Paul Brady that I love a lot, and there was a recording he did years and years ago before he became known as a writer of pop songs, songs that ended up being done by Bonnie Raitt and other people. He was a well-known and extremely talented singer of traditional Celtic music. And there's a recording that was made at a famous hall in Dublin, I believe it was. And the tapes were lost, literally lost for years until someone unearthed them in an attic. They literally were the kind of recordings where they made one pass and rescued them because the tapes were going to fall apart. And that album came to be known as the Liberty Tapes. All the great Celtic players and Paul Brady. And if I were to start somewhere, that would also lead my imagination into every other album that I wouldn't have on that deserted weekend you're talking
about. Yes. If it's just a weekend, you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
I would say that, you know, you're on a desert island, and that's such a different question, right? Because you really have to think over and over and over again. A weekend, you can kind of just get into more of what you're currently thinking because, you know, the weekend's, it's not going to last
sure.
that long. You know what I'm saying? All right. So very cool. I love both of those answers very much. Another question, maybe off the cuff here. Shelby, how would your previous bandmates describe you and your work ethic?
From bands prior to Achilles Wheel?
They're probably all going to say the same thing, right?
Depends on how far back you go, I guess. I'd like to think that they would say I was a good, solid bandmate, easy to work with, flexible, and didn't play too loud and those kind of good things. But that's a really hard question. I don't really think about it too much. I mean, there's been a whole bunch of different bands, and some of them were just one summer a tour, and then I never even see the guys again. And who knows what those guys are saying? They're probably saying something to their new bass player. Bands that have been with for a long time, you know, where it was more than just a year or something, you know, I've been with a few bands like that and still basically in touch with all of those guys, and I think they love me as dearly as I love them. Once you play music with someone, there's a heart connection that it's not matched by anything else. Sort of connected for life in some way or another. Even if you part on terrible conditions, you're still connected by that love that you shared somehow. Music cements you together. Don't really know what those guys would be saying, but I hope it's all good. Yeah. I tried to be a nice guy.
Yeah, well, you know, if it's not too much in your thought process, it probably means it's all good, I'm thinking. I don't know.
I think so. I mean, there's a couple guys that I resent that I'd have words with if I ran into now, and I suppose that could be true going the other way. But I don't know, and I don't dwell on it, that's for sure.
Right on. How about you, Paul? What are your previous bandmates telling us about you?
For Shelby, as he was wrestling with trying to answer that question, because I don't know that we ever really know those things, but I would say, and I'm going to sort of flip this one on its head and say that I hope the same thing is true for me that I feel about other people that I have been blessed to work with in a way that has been not only inspiring, but felt effortless. And that is, on stage should feel the same way it feels when you're in the middle of the night and you're burnt after a gig and you're driving and you feel comfortable enough with whoever's at the wheel to take a nap. And I think that yes. That's kind of how I feel about Shelby. And I hope that other people feel the same way about me, too, that when I step up to the microphone, people aren't going, oh, God, what's going to happen?
Wow, that's pretty good, Paul.
Shelby's laughing a little bit too loud there.
Well, Paul and I drive a lot together. It just works out that way. And the both of us, I consider to be very good drivers, and I will take a nap while Paul's driving. And Paul doesn't sleep. I'm not sure he ever sleeps, but I think he would, and he trusts my driving enough to take a nap in the car.
That's amazing.
It's part of my order, Shelby. I don't sleep.
Okay, yeah, and I don't want to know.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Well, you guys are great guys. I want to talk a little bit more about the live album, Live on Wesley's Road. But before that, are you writing new material and are there plans to put out a new studio album?
There are plans. The way I would categorize that question is by saying that an exact date has not been put into any physical calendar or virtual digital calendar anywhere, but the ever-growing size of the bag of new songs that we're wrestling with when we do get together means that it's going to happen sometime in the foreseeable future. Otherwise, we're going to be playing a bunch of songs no one knows.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have to get them recorded for, at the very least, for posterity, but also, you know, to some record sales and CD sales and some streams and stuff like that. It's been a tough couple years. We need an income stream coming back in. That's why we're booking shows and trying to work as much as possible.
But we do have a lot of new material that we've been working on, and I think that getting it recorded before too long is going to be necessary. Otherwise, One thing about this band is we have three songwriters in the group, and there's just no shortage of material, so it does behoove us to keep up with that as it comes.
That's beautiful that you've got three songwriters and they're all very talented. How important is it to test drive the songs with an audience first?
The most important.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times that's how we'll work out a song. Johnny in particular, but Paul also, will show us a song, you know, as we're about to get on stage. You know, just strum a few chords on his guitar and say, I got this new song, and we'll try it out right there live in front of people. They're almost always really good and not perfect, but really good and energetic, and those first performances often are unrehearsed. And then we'll go in and work out the finer details in rehearsal or backstage at the next show.
Wow.
So we take advantage when we can to work stuff up and tighten things up a little.
It says a lot about the band and their confidence in A, the songwriter, and B, in each other to just go for it. I look at that very highly as a place to be, I think, in a band. It's really magical for you.
We all have the confidence that we can lean on each other to at least not mess up. I think all of us know how to not play if we're unsure about what to play. And inserting silence into music is always a good thing as well. You know, and it's as important as the notes that you play. So, and none of us are just like horrified and frozen at the thought of making a mistake in front of an audience. I think we make mistakes with the very best of them. And I think that's one of the things that our devout fans really love, is that they know they're going to hear something that's just as good as it can be, and it doesn't have to be picture perfect every time. It's going to change and metamorphose. I think our songs develop a lot. By the time we get to the recording studio, we've played these songs in front of people, you know, a dozen times or more, and they've started to gel and started to figure out what works and what doesn't. And
also, there's a trust with each other, and I think that the people who enjoy the kind of music that we play have a certain trust. We're going to try to do our best, but no one ever seems to get too upset when someone has a sheepish look on their face, and you just know that they're feeling like, oops.
Oops, that would be me.
Yeah, so, you know, we do the best we can, but when we do make a mistake, it's kind of like, yeah, well, I guess that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. We'll incorporate it into the song.
Right.
We do what needs to be done, and if rehearsing live on stage in front of people is one of the things that has to happen, then, well, by God, that's what we're going to do.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I would love to hear, like, a recording of, like, that. Almost wanted to call it the Cage version, where you just have silence, because you were saying the silence is, you know, because if you're not sure what to play, that's the best note, right? Silence.
You don't know what to play, don't play nothing, and that's just as good as, or better than something that you might have played. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's certainly not my thought. I'm pretty sure that came from, like, Miles Davis or somebody great, you know. The spaces between the notes mean as much as the notes themselves.
Absolutely. I was kind of being silly because John Cage went out on stage. He was a great, you know.
Absolutely.
And
love
just
that guy.
And played nothing, right? And there's the sound of the air conditioner or whatever, and that's the piece. Thank you very much. Everybody clap for me.
Thank you very much, yes. The Andy Kaufman of classical composers.
Oh, that's funny.
I performed a John Cage piece at a Catholic school hall
down in Marin County. It was the most bizarre piece of music you ever heard. It was guys on cans, like playing them like drum sets, and I had like a big tub of water and a phone to ring and all this stuff, and it was great performance. I think John Cage was a brilliant, brilliant man.
Well, I think you guys are pretty brilliant too, and I like the process. It's a high level of human experience to be able to collaborate with others with that kind of confidence. So I'll leave it at that, because I really do think that when we have that union and that trust in other humans, that really shows us that, hey, maybe we are all connected in some way. You guys are just proving it there on stage.
No, maybe about it.
I like to be safe about stuff like that, just like Paul was with the, I think you're about to hear this song. It's like, well, I think it's true, even though I really know it's true. It's like, why do I do this? Why don't I just say it as it is? You know, we're all connected, ladies and gentlemen, and some of us prove it more than others. That's all. I'd like to ask about another song on Live on Wesley's Road. Great live triple CD product here that is just fantastic from Achilles Wheel. I wanted to ask you about the song Sanctuary, Paul. Can you tell us the backstory of this?
I can. Shelby knows about as much as I do. Neither one of us wrote it. This was a Johnny Mojo song, and also a co-write that he did with a good friend of ours by the name of George Lloyd. And I think that one of the things that they did so well together is that the two of them, both great individuals, loving hearts, but they have a very kind of different approach to the world. One of our friends has a little darker attitude about things, and Johnny, on the other hand, has sort of this eternal optimism. And they came at this song together with the idea that those two things could be incorporated into a single theme. And that was, you know, that as dark as things get, that there is still something that you need to work towards, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel, you can call it that, but just to illuminate whatever circumstances are falling on your world at the time and to create sanctuary through that experience. And that, I think, it really gives that song a lot of potency for us, because it really was written by two very, very disparate points of view.
Disparate points of view, but total brothers.
Yeah.
Song is, boy, in the right setting, really hits the mood and hits people hard. You can see it in their faces when you're playing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, well, we all need a little sanctuary.
Yeah, indeed. This is Paul Kamm with Achilles Wheel. Big thanks to John DeMaria for having us on Jam Frequency Radio. We're all going to listen to a song now by Johnny Mojo and George Lloyd called Sanctuary.
When love is lost its value, Yes, and all that makes us family. Vanquished by fear and greed. Sanctuary. Sanctuary. Well, now the days are getting darker. Take one step forward, take two steps back, steps back, steps back. But while we quench that thirsty cancer, well, we'll be left to resurrect. I'm gonna break out my dancing shoes. Yeah, I'm gonna kick and stomp and twirl. Chase all the darkness on down the road. Let my freak flag unfurl. Thank you.
sanctuary.
All right, my friends, have a great rest of the day. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks talking to you.
Bye. Thanks, John. Bye.
That concludes another fun episode of the Jam Frequency Radio Show. Thank you to the artists for sharing their story and music, and thank you for tuning in. If you'd like to learn more about the Jam Frequency Radio Show, visit the website at jamfrequencyradio.com. I'd love to hear from you. If you resonated with this week's artist, support them. Go to a show, pick up a t-shirt, download their music, and tell a friend. Thank you again for tuning in. This is John DeMaria signing off from the Jam Frequency Radio Show, where words and music kaleidoscope.